Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 27th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we dive into home improvement projects, and here to answer your repair and maintenance questions is licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy. To join our conversation today, if you have a question, now's the time to call 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy and your home improvement calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today, and we welcome back Darren Tracy. He is a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. Darren is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects. He is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question for Darren today, the number is 800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551, or you can throw us an email at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
What are you working on right now?
Several projects. In the green room before I came in, I just received a call from an insurance company about a sprinkler system freeze-up and a claim that's associated with that.
Well, fun.
We have three residential renovation projects ongoing. Just submitted a bid today for a project for the state of New York, design and install. My part was to design and install a foundation for a monument.
Oh, nice.
Art monument.
Can you say where approximately where it is?
Yeah, it's on Hudson River Parkway. Down near Poughkeepsie.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yep.
I imagine there's plenty of red tape when you do a state job,
huh? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah?
I had a box that, 2x2x2 box full of documents. I was up last night making copies. Everything and, 4 copies of everything, 2 originals. The paperwork with the state of New York is not so much fun.
You need to keep the bureaucrats in business.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do something, right? Okay, anything you want to mention before we get going on the program here?
Yes. Regarding a nonprofit that I'm involved with that you mentioned in your introduction, New York State Society of Professional Engineers.
Right.
I'd like to mention one of our members, Nick Bodanker. He recently won Local Engineer of the Year.
Oh, terrific.
Young Engineer of the Year, and also statewide Young Engineer of the Year. And on top of that, he won National Young Engineer of the Year.
Wow.
So
it's a lot of awards.
Here in
good
our
for
local
him.
Area. And our organization raises money for college or high school seniors that are planning to enter college in the field of engineering. And we work hard and scrape up money here and there and donate it to these high school seniors.
Well, that's terrific, and that seems like an accomplished young fellow, so that's nice. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest, home improvement, maintenance, repair today on the program, and let's go to the phones. Linda in Troy, you're on, Linda.
Oh, hi. Oh, well, I was the first one. I'm so happy that you have this show here. I'm in the process of restoring a detached three-story Victorian row house, and there are two. My concern is that there are two additions. They used to be, a staircase that was closed in. Then they put in another staircase, and that was closed in. And I'm working on the first floor. And there are lots of replacing a lot of missed studs that have been cut out and missing headers and so forth. But I'm really concerned with the footings. And a little bit of work has been done. You can see in the basement there are some jacks and so forth. But it's beyond, you know, like going to YouTube and getting videos. I mean, I need a professional person to look at it. Mm. And I was just wondering who I would talk to. It seems so hard to get people that want to help with a small project, you know.
Well, isn't that the truth?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can send me some pictures after the program, and I'll take a look at those pictures. I might be able to help you in short order. And my website is westbranchengineering.com, and you can find my email there. But generally speaking, West, W-E-S-T, branch, B-R-A-N-C-H, engineering.com. You can go to that website and get my email.
And to be clear, you're just offering a little free advice.
Yeah, this is free advice.
Okay.
And I do this, I receive, after I have a program, a show here, I'll receive between 5 and 10 or 20 calls.
Nice. And how many are from me?
Thank you.
Well, Linda, anyway, if it's something quick and easy, I'll help you out, and there's no charge, and I'm glad to do that. I would be probably more concerned about the framing. Is this wood or steel structure?
You know, it's one addition. It's a combination.
Okay,
it's
I would be more concerned about the wood not rotting and the connections being robust. And the same with steel, make sure that nothing is rusting out and those connections are in good shape more than the footings. Even if you encounter some frost heave, it can go up and down with the frost. And as long as it's not pulling away from the building, since they've been there a long time, I would expect the foundations are probably one of your less important concerns.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, that's what I've been doing. I've been, you know, I just open up, take off the wood siding to see what's under there, and it's all kinds of things have been cut off, you know, and then you'll find a post, you know, like a 4x6 post that's just like intact, and everything else has been chewed off practically.
One caveat on that, Linda, if the structure is actually settling into the ground, then that would be a foundation issue. So you'd want to take a closer look at that. But send me a couple pictures, and I might be able to help you out in short order.
Thanks, Linda.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye now. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Michael in Poughkeepsie. Michael, you're on.
Yes. I have a house that has a 2x10 with a roof at a 12-12 pitch, and the slats extend 2 feet out from the wall, but they are completely ventilated. And I do have the channels to let the water get up to the attic. I mean, to get the air up to the attic, and I have a full ridge vent. But still, almost every winter, I get ice dams forming on the north side into the gutters. Any way which I can do that without using those electric heaters to melt the ice?
Yes, you can get up in the attic and make sure those proper, what they're called, are proper vents, are installed appropriately near your exterior wall, because what tends to happen is the insulation in your attic bunches up near the exterior wall, and the air cannot enter your soffit and travel up to your ridge vent. So that's...
Well, I had installed those fiberglass channels so that they did have a way to flow up, and I made sure that they extended into the soffit area so that would be airflow.
Okay. Well, I would double check to make sure that the insulation hasn't moved around up there. You could also check to make sure that there is not moisture entering your attic space. For instance, make sure your bathrooms are not venting directly into your attic space, because that can add not only moisture but a warm temperature to your roof and cause that snow to melt on your roof, and then when it gets down towards the eave, it will refreeze and become a problem.
Yeah.
Well, I do know that all of the exhaust fans shoot directly out through the wall to the outside, even they're not vented.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it sounds like the detail that you described is appropriate, so I'm surprised that you're icing up like that. I would take another, maybe have another set of eyes take a look at that. There might be some gap in the insulation. Or, as I said, it may have moved and clogged up some of the ventilation passages.
All right, Michael, thanks for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 here on Vox Pop. Claire in Albany. Claire.
Thank you for taking my call. Darren,
when I take a shower, the water comes out of the shower head as well as the tub. Now, this started about 8 years ago when my husband changed the shower head. And I had a plumber in, and he changed the faucet in the tub, so it still leaks. I'm losing a lot of water. Can you help me, Darren?
Well, it sounds like you have a problem with your diverter valve on your tub spout. There's a little valve down there. Typically, it's a toggle that you pull up, which allows the water to bypass the tub spout and travel up to your shower head. So that's what you need to take a look at.
Well, the wall is tiled. Does that mean we have to tear the tile out?
Not necessarily. Some of those tub spouts, in fact, many of them are threaded. So you could actually unscrew that tub spout and replace it.
Mm.
That's a possibility.
That would take a plumber,
yeah,
right?
Right.
I couldn't do that.
A plumber, a handyman.
It wouldn't be a bad idea to consult someone who might know a thing or two about that.
Well, I had a plumber who I thought could remedy the situation, but to no avail. Thank you very much.
Listen, if you contact a handyman instead of a plumber, warn him to be careful about removing that spout, because sometimes those are fed with a copper pipe, and then when you're trying to unscrew the spout, it actually twists the copper and destroys the copper pipe. And I know from experience.
All right, Claire, we have to take a break here. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop. We'll be back. Always good to come back when the bass solo is playing. It's a Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with Darren Tracy. Darren is here to answer your home improvement, maintenance, and repair questions. And Darren, before we get back to the phones, a stack of emails here. This one's from Dale, who writes, I'm concerned I have a mold issue in my house. How do I test for mold?
You can visually take a look, and if it's there, it's there. You can also contact a mold company. There are two different types of companies now. Residential closings require a mold assessment and then a mold remediator contractor if there are mold problems. So there are mold assessors out there, and they're pretty common these days.
Okay. This one is from Aaron in Greenfield, Mass. This question is in regard to applying mortar on the exterior of a stone foundation. Earlier in the season, I dug along my stone foundation to remove tree roots. I have cleared the stones from roots and loose debris as best I can. What is the best product to fill in the gaps between stones? Will freezing temperatures affect the cure? And that's from Aaron.
Freezing temperatures may affect the cure. However, you can put some plastic or blanket along the foundation this time of the year to keep them from freezing. And actually, if mortar or concrete freezes a little bit, it's not terrible, and it will, upon increasing temperatures, continue to cure to its ultimate compressive strength. But typically, a type S mortar, which can be purchased at a hardware or big box store, S is one of the higher compressive strength mortars, and you probably wouldn't use that with older brick because it could damage the brick because it's stronger than the brick. For that, you'd use a different type, like a type N, which has a lower compressive strength. But the key is proper preparation on that. Those joints, you want to rake those out mechanically or with a pressure washer or wire brush, just like with being in the dentist's office. It's the preparation of the filling. You don't have a dentist just go ahead and throwing that amalgam in there. He does a really good job of preparation, so that's the key.
All right, this one's from Mitch. I'm looking into building a bathroom in my second floor above the current bathroom. Standalone tub, separate shower, toilet, and vanity. I'm concerned about the weight of all this. I'm currently remodeling my first floor bathroom and have found that the joists are only 2 feet by 6 feet. Should I do more to reinforce the floor?
Okay, he probably means those joists are two by sixes.
Yeah, two by six.
And that's a function of the span. I mean, that's the 2 by 6 is fine for maybe a 4 or 6 or even an 8 foot span if it's on a 16 inches on center spacing.
Yeah.
But generally, that's not very deep for a floor joist. So you need to check into that further and determine what the span is.
Okay.
And contact an informed contractor or an engineer who could help you out with that.
All right. This one's from Patrick in North Adams, and then we'll head back to the phones. Patrick writes, I have a pinhole leak in a copper domestic hot water line that goes to my garage, of all places. I've watched a few videos demonstrating shark bite fittings. Are they really as easy to use as the videos make them seem?
Yes.
What's a shark bite fitting?
It clamps on the copper pipe, and you can crimp it in place and forms a joint. However, on a pinhole, I suppose you'd have to have a special type of fitting that was split in half that covered the pipe from one side, then the other, and then you crimp it on.
Okay.
I've also seen repairs where if you could get the water out of the system, you could just use some copper solder. Flux and solder, and solder over top of that pinhole, and that's a pretty slick, easy fix, too.
Darren Tracy is our guest, and we'll go back to the phones. Bruce in Mountainville. Bruce, you're on.
Hi. I have a question about repair of a chimney. We had someone tell us that they could wrap it in tar paper and paint it red so it wouldn't look, unusual. Have you ever heard of this being done? Does that make any sense?
No, that's a wild one. No, and maybe aesthetically it makes sense, but from practical functioning standpoint, definitely not. So, what do you have, mortar falling out of the joints?
There are a couple of spaces there that should be repointed, and we talked to someone who suggested that. But I was just curious.
Tar paper and painting.
I've never heard of someone doing that.
No.
Not a good plan.
Painting tar paper. Now, there are some other options. Is this stone or brick chimney, Bruce?
It's a brick chimney.
Yeah. I've seen chimneys so far gone with brick that you can wrap the chimney with a metal lath, and then apply a mortar, stucco mortar to it.
So wire lath and mortar. Okay.
Right. And I've actually done that before pretty effectively. It's an economical repair. I've done a lot of economical repairs.
Well, we all like that.
And, that can hold up pretty well with the lath. You attach the lath to the existing brick with concrete fasteners, commonly known as tapcons, and then apply a coat of mortar over top. So if the brick is really bad, instead of taking down the chimney and rebuilding the whole brick, that's a relatively economical repair.
Okay. Well, I should say one more thing. It's a fireplace. It's a chimney from a fireplace that does not get used and will not be used because the building was built in 1770.
Okay. Well, still, so, you need to protect it from the elements and particularly the top.
Right.
You need to seal the top, whether it's a stone cap or some other type of a cap.
Okay.
You got to make sure water is not getting into that masonry structure. That's key.
Right. Okay.
All right.
So during the last snow, we had some water dripping, but we thought it was from the snow that got in because in the last couple of days of rain, we did not get any water coming in.
Okay.
So,
And if you're not using, if it's not a functional chimney and you're not using it, you have more options. You have more options for sealing the top. You can build a plywood structure on top and cover it with rubber. And
Yep. All right, Bruce. Well, thanks a lot and good luck. We appreciate the call. And now it's time for Fontaine in Hudson. You're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
Speaking of economical, I have a question for you. I love to watch HGTV, and they're always knocking down walls, or in my case, it's not an entire wall. It's just that these two wing walls come into the living space, and they eat up the space. And I'm wondering, besides calling an engineer in to determine this, how do I know if I can knock down those semi-walls and put in that metal beam that goes across the top like they do in HGTV. How do I know if I can do that? You know what I'm saying?
I do understand the question. You don't necessarily need an engineer. You can have an informed contractor. And you don't necessarily need a steel beam either. You could use a wood beam, multiple layers of two-by-dimensional lumber or engineered lumber.
Okay.
And there are tables that are out there on the Internet, and lumber suppliers, particularly engineered lumber suppliers I have, that will tell you how long a particular beam of a certain size will span. So you can investigate that yourself, or you can hire a contractor or an informed contractor or an engineer.
How do you know that the contractor is informed?
Ha ha! Good question.
You can talk to them. You can get a read on that. You can talk to your local building supply.
Word of mouth. Ask around.
That's not necessarily going to provide you definitive information. But this is where, if you go with a professional, like a licensed engineer or like a licensed architect, you know, they have to pass really stringent exams and requirements, which will put your mind at rest, and their license is on the line to provide you with accurate information. So, you know, that's an example.
True that. Okay. Thank you. You're a font of information, and I'm very appreciative.
Thank you for the call. Over to Marcia in Scotia. You're on.
Oh, John.
Ha!
What's the thing? I have a problem. We have a 1958 house, and we have a septic system. What we're getting now is this smell of sewage that's not like in the cellar where the pipe, you know, comes in from outside. It's in my kitchen in a corner cabinet that's like a Lazy Susan, that's like butting up against my bathroom wall. So it's something to do with that pipe that goes up like through your roof when you have a septic system for venting.
Right.
I'm thinking it's the pipe. Because we don't know. Like, the bathroom doesn't smell, but if I open up, and it happens when the weather turns cold. It's happened for a couple of years, and we get the septic tank pumped, so that's not changing anything. We were told to put some kind of something in there from the septic tank cleaner. We've done that. That doesn't change it. But it comes out, like, if you open that corner cabinet, and even when you don't open it, sometimes when I even open up my drawers where I have my utensils, which are right next to that, the smell of sewage comes out. So I'm wondering if, I know there's a pipe that must be going down through the house, probably goes down to the cellar. If something happened to that pipe, like if it has a crack in it, like I said, it's never been touched since the house was built in 1958. If that has a crack in it, or maybe it's totally corroded, who knows, because we have well water, so that does do a job on the pipes.
Okay, Marcia, I understand the problem.
Who does that? Is that a do-it-yourself project? Like somebody'd have to go on the roof, which I really don't want my 70-year-old husband to do.
Yeah. Okay, let me first explain what I think the problem is. And I think that is a vent pipe that has become separated at a glue joint. Particularly when you say when it's colder outside, you'll smell it. Yeah, because what will happen then when it's colder outside, that cold air can drop down into the pipe, into your warm house, and you tend to smell it more that way. But that's the most likely source of the problem. And you just have to get a handyman and or a plumber in there to trace out the pipe and find where that leak is. I'm pretty sure that's what the problem is. If it wasn't an active area, I would suggest checking to make sure your P-traps are full of water. Because that can happen also if P-trap is designed to seal the septic gases by filling the pipe in a P fashion with water so that the gases cannot travel back up into your home. And sometimes in an unused bathroom or an unused area, that water will evaporate and you'll get those gases. But you said it's in your kitchen, and I'm assuming it's an active
kitchen.
Yeah,
it's just in the kitchen, and that's what makes it really weird because it's just, like, horrible.
Vent pipe
that is
pulled apart.
I notice it because that's where I'm cooking, you know, and if I open that thing and you get that smell of sewage, it really, like, kind of puts a damper on what you're cooking.
Takes the appetite away.
Yeah. No.
And I, you know, my husband doesn't smell it as much as me, but, you know, noses are noses. Some people can smell things and some can't. And I don't really have that much people coming in here to say, oh, go smell my corner cabinet.
And that's a weird thing to say anyway, frankly, Marcia.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. And the funny thing is that I don't have any smell in the cellar. You know, where the sewer...
It may dissipate. It's local to that area, and it may dissipate.
Yeah,
but I think
so
you probably have a joint that's pulled apart.
Who I would call would be like a plumber.
Plumber or handyman.
You know,
if
that
you
doesn't sound like
one.
A huge job, right? It's probably not the end of the world.
Not a huge job to repair, maybe a huge job to find, because it may be buried in the wall.
All right. Well, hey, Marcia, good luck.
It is in the wall, yeah. But okay, that certainly gives me some ideas.
Well, thanks a lot, and I hope you have success. We go over to Jim in Scotia. Jim, you're on. Hello, Jim.
Hello. I touched my speaker off.
Okay.
I have an outside door on the side of my house, which is an unusual width. It's about 28 inches wide, and through the normal retail channels, I've been unable to find a replacement. I want to get something a little more efficient. So I wondered if you had any suggestions as to where else I could check. It's a wooden door. I'd like to maybe make it a
right.
little more.
28 inches is a little bit odd. 2'6" is a common width, 30 inches.
30 inches, yeah.
The nomenclature for doors is typically a foot, then inches. So a 30-inch door would be 2 feet, 6 inches. They call them 2'6" doors.
Well, 2'6", yeah.
Yeah, you can get 2'4" doors, and which would be a 28-inch door. They'd be a special order. But if you talk to your lumber yard, you can get those ordered. Yeah.
Okay, through a lumber yard. Okay.
Through your lumber yard. And if it's in, you can also go to salvage yards too. If you have some carpentry skills or know somebody that has some carpentry skills.
Right.
And pick up a used door and customize
salvage places.
Right.
Yeah.
Typically, some of these older doors are oddball sizes, anyways. And
exactly.
You could even rip some of those down to
a
particular width. We've done that a lot.
Oh, really? You mean like from a 28? I mean from a 30
from
to a 30, 28, you mean?
Right. Correct, yeah.
Okay. Well, a lumber yard or a salvage yard?
Yeah, it's not an animal that's not made.
Okay.
They're out there.
I figured so much. That's what I was wondering. Well, thank you for the leads. And, you know, any local lumber yards was worth starting out with, I would imagine. Then.
All right. Hey,
you
good
bet.
Luck, Jim. Thanks for the call. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. The number is 800-348-2551 on this home maintenance, repair, and improvement edition of Vox Pop. We go to Scott in Longmeadow. Scott, you're on.
Hey, thanks very much for taking my call. So I'm in the process of replacing a toilet in a bathroom. When I pulled the toilet up, I realized that the floor was rotted, the flange was rotted. So I went ahead, I replaced the subfloor. I made sure that there were braces all between the floor joists, so it's all secure. I cut the plastic flange off of the black ABS pipe that it was attached to. And now I'm in the process of attaching the underlayment to which I will put over the top adhesive tiles. And the two questions I have are, what's the best way to attach that underlayment? And I'm curious if you have any experience using what's called a twist and set flange that I could then apply to the pipe that I have now exposed in the floor for the toilet to be attached to.
Okay, and the first question, what are you attaching the subfloor to, the floor joists that you repaired?
So the subfloor was attached. It's two layers of 5/8 plywood that I actually patched because I cut out the rotted areas and put in clean plywood. I attached that to the floor joists, and on top of that subfloor, I'm now putting quarter-inch wood. It looks like plywood underlayment. To which over the top of that, I'll put the adhesive tiles.
Okay. The whole bathroom or just around the toilet, the repair?
The whole bathroom. I'll be putting the adhesive tiles down.
Yeah, but the subfloor, did you replace it just locally around the toilet, or did you replace the complete bathroom subfloor?
Yeah, back to where I found the floor was solid.
Yeah.
The subfloor. So
if it's a smaller area, I would use adhesive and screws, just a small area, just as a belt and suspenders measure. If you're redoing the whole bathroom, you could use nails. an air nailer. Typically, new construction, they'd use an air nailer for the subfloor and any underlayment, like a quarter-inch Luan underlayment. But I would use screws and glues. And then regarding that twist flange you're talking about, I'm not familiar with that particular terminology for that, but those flanges are called closet flanges for toilets. Typically there's a little slot in those flanges. I'm not sure if that's where they get the twist terminology for the particular product that you have. But,
it's a black, they come in white PVC and black ABS, and it fits inside of the 3-inch pipe. It has a rubber gasket around the part.
Okay, so it's a repair
pipe.
Product.
Yes,
yeah, it's
correct.
A repair product. You know, that sounds like that would be a good fitting for that. And then, of course, you've got to have your wax rings before you install your toilet on top of your closet flange. And I double up those wax rings just to make sure that there's enough there, and that helps with the seal.
Okay, because I know the flange will be at least a quarter inch above the flooring, so I'm pretty confident that that'll reach. But you think I should still double up on the wax ring?
I double up. They're inexpensive, you can buy deeper wax rings.
Mm.
Okay,
you can buy a single deeper one.
Okay. Well, Scott, we have to take a break here. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551 is our number. Home Improvement today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551. The number. Darren Tracy is our expert guest today, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. Darren, this one came in from Nick. It says, "Hi, Darren. I'm tuned into the show." Well, that's good. Thank you for recognizing our Professional Engineering Society and my selection for the National Award. Oh, this is the award winner. Well, this is great. He says, "I feel lucky to have the opportunity to work together to advance engineering profession and encourage students to consider engineering as a career. Also, keep up the great work in problem-solving home improvement projects and questions on this show." Wow. Do you have anything to say?
Hey, Nick's a good guy.
That's all you can do. You get complimented like that, that's all you can say. You're a very modest fellow. All right, next email is from Nathan. The subject heading, leaky roof surprise. I think I had that dish over at the Chinese restaurant the other day. It was very good.
That's good.
See, Nathan writes, "After the consistent rain snow recently, we woke up this morning to find a 1x1 damp spot in the middle of a second floor ceiling. Yikes. The attic above is unfinished with beams, no floor, just insulation. The house is about 15 years old, and we've never had any leaks before. Before we open up the trap door in the closet and climb up into the attic, what should we be looking for, and what are signs that we need to bring in a roofer? If you have time, could you suggest some qualities to look for in a roofer?"
Just a comment about my laugh. During the break, Ray and I were discussing comedy. I asked Ray if he ever introduces humor, and he said, "Well, you know, it has to come naturally." And, you know, that last comment.
Yeah, there you go.
That's very good.
And there'll be complaints about it, I'm sure.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
All right, so go ahead.
Okay, the slushy roof. You actually get a lot of roof leaks. I was at an architect's office this morning, and they had a roof leak there. With the slushy snow, you get rain and slushy snow, and it'll build up, and you'll get a head of water on the roof, so it does create a lot of problems. And typically, those leaks don't go away, so they need to be investigated, and often they're difficult to investigate. A couple weeks ago, I was working on one, and I had to go up in the attic above the roof. I found the leak and thought the problem was solved. Got a call from a tenant. Now, still leaking. Went back up. There was another hole. So it's just an investigative procedure that you do have to go through. And regarding the roofing, we talked about word of mouth earlier in the program. That's really a good way to find roofers. It's really hard to find skilled tradespeople now because the economy seems to be chugging along, and people are just not out there. However, on the roofing end, that has slowed down some, so you might be able to find a roofer.
Okay. And so qualities to look for in a roofer? Obviously not scared of heights.
Well, safety.
Yeah.
You definitely need to have somebody that's concerned with their safety, and I would make sure that they have insurance in place.
That's a good
point.
Get
somebody up on the roof, and they might have an employee, and they're not insured, and they slip, and they fall, and all the fun goes away when somebody gets hurt.
I got to assume that if you're a roofer and you're not concerned about safety, you're probably not going to be roofing all that long.
There's small guys out there that fly under the radar and will take that risk, and but as a homeowner, I would advise against that for the most part, particularly on wet days, slippery days on the roof.
All right, this one's from Andrew. I was chasing some water damage at my parents' home, found in the ceiling below the attic. Looked for a roof leak, but instead found the sewer vent pipe made of iron had corroded, 1-inch crack in a joint a few feet below the roof. Roof appears fine, though the stick up on the roof needs a hood. I jammed the crack with plumber putty, but wanted some thoughts on cutting the section and replacing with PVC. And that's from Andrew.
Okay, you can do that, and you would make a connection with what's called a Fernco coupling, which is a rubber coupling, and they're made specifically to connect different pipe diameters. The diameter of a new PVC pipe would be different diameter than an old cast iron pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called a Fernco coupling. As a temporary fix, you could have a little problem getting it through the roof. I mean, you have to get up on the roof, and you want to make sure it extends 18 inches above the roof line. That's the code. It should be a 3-inch diameter minimum pipe for your vent.
Mm-hmm.
And, as a temporary repair, which could possibly be a long-term repair, since you don't have any moisture or water running through that pipe, you could wrap that pipe with a rubber material and hose clamps. And
like the rubber stuff on the TV show late at night?
Well, that too.
There
you
go.
Use that too. There's an application for that product. And I would, if it were my project, I would tend to try that because of how easy it is and the probability that it would work is high.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Darren Tracy is our guest. Michael in West Springfield. Michael.
How you doing?
Good.
All right, it's a two-part question. I got a leak in my cylinder. It's around the hatchway. I did everything, sealed it around, ran gasket material where the door. Whoops.
You all right?
Sorry, everything.
Okay.
You still there?
Yeah, sure. Are you?
Okay, sorry. I lost the ball.
All right.
Anyway, I cleaned up everything, went around it. I'm still getting water in. And then one part of it, it looks like it's actually coming up from the ground.
Okay, you mentioned
I don't know if it's...
Let me just take the first part of the question first. Hatchway, what type of a hatchway? Are you talking about a Bilco door hatchway into your basement or roof hatch?
Correct. Yep, into the basement. Sorry.
Okay, Bilco door. All right.
Okay. Sounds like you might have some water coming in through your foundation.
Okay, it is brick. I'm not brick, block.
Yeah, without seeing, it's hard to say. I mean, those Bilco doors, unless they're damaged, they're designed to shed water, so typically water would not go through the door. Where it's resting on the concrete block, it may enter the top of the masonry concrete block and get in there. I would check that out.
One side of that Bilco door, there's a, the house was built in the 30s. It's got those window wells. I don't know what else you want to call them. It's just a cutout, goes into the ground around the window.
Around the basement window. It's not part of the Bilco door, but adjacent to the Bilco door?
Correct. Could the water be coming in through there? Because the water just, there's a gutter above it, but it rains, water gets in there.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Is there a certain level of dirt that's supposed to be in that thing? Or is that dirt all the way to the bottom of the foundation?
Typically, you want dirt or I would put stone in that window well a couple of inches below the bottom of any wood framing.
Okay.
So I would do, and I'm not sure where the water is getting in, but it's pretty easy for water to get into a concrete foundation. Try to divert the water away from that area. Sounds like you are with gutters. That's the primary defense. Secondary defense would be to grade the soil away from your foundation.
and probably not enough time to get into the detail.
It was coming around between like where the wall meets the floor.
Yeah.
I even sealed it with
On the inside where the wall at the base of the wall where it meets the floor, basement floor.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, that's where it's going to come in. Yeah. You've got hydrostatic pressure out there, and it's. You've got water coming in there. That's a tough to keep that water from coming in.
Okay. Well, we got to move on here.
I use that Loctite or lock. It's like hydraulic.
It's really difficult to patch that on what's called the negative side or the inside.
Right.
The best thing to do is when you're constructing the foundation wall, seal the outside with waterproofing or bitumastic damp proofing. I know that's not possible because that's already done. This the second best thing to do is keep the water away from that area by gutters and shedding the water away from the foundation with grading or an impermeable plastic layer. If you want to talk to me more about that, you can email me. I've got a little detail that's.
And what is your email address?
Darren@westbranchinc.com. DarrenAt WestBranchInc.com.
All right, Michael, thanks for the call. We're going to move it along here. Jerry in Chatham. Jerry, you've been waiting. Go ahead.
Okay, so my questions have to do with getting nice tight miter joints. Over the years, I'm a kind of do-it-yourself guy. I know just enough to be dangerous. And I've replaced actually all the woodwork in my house. But, you know, it's opening up a little bit in places during the wintertime. And so basically, here's my two questions. What are some really good hints to get these nice tight joints, especially on woodwork and shoe molding? And how much of this has to do with the quality of the wood we get today that isn't as stable as the other, as it might have been years ago?
Okay. I've heard discussions about wood. You'll never be as good a carpenter as what my grandfather was because he had better wood to work with. I mean, to a certain extent, that may be true. But, you know, all the good trees are not gone. There's good dimensional lumber out there still. Wood is hygroscopic. It does expand with moisture, and there's always going to be some movement. Wood moves longitudinally a fair amount, but not in length. Like you'll have a long board. I'm looking at the clock here to make sure I have enough time.
You have enough time. Okay. Yeah.
If you have a long board in length, it does not expand or contract very much, but in width, both dimensions of width, it does.
Okay.
So you're always going to have that movement. However, if it's not restricted it on a door casing, it can expand to the outside of the door, and it shouldn't be a problem. Holding the joints together, you can glue those joints on new joints. You can glue those joints, and I like to use screws. You can use trim head screws to help hold them together, and they work better than nails because of the inclined plane of the screw. Mm. It helps hold that bond together. There are also little biscuits that you can use with a biscuit joiner, which it makes a groove in each end of the wood, and then you have a little piece of wood that's called a biscuit, and you apply glue to that, and you put your miter together, and that works really well,
too. Okay. Well, Jerry, thanks for the call. Hello. Teresa, are you there?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good. You're on.
Hi. So we're planning on replacing our kitchen counter in the spring and are looking into different options as far as surface goes. I was wondering if you had a recommendation for something that's durable and low maintenance, and I was also wondering if there's any surfaces that you can actually put like a hot pot on that won't get damaged?
Yes, we're working on a project right now and we're replacing a countertop, and I weighed my options on the countertops and I went with plastic laminate because it's relatively inexpensive and functions pretty well.
Okay.
And they have different styles of plastic laminate. You cannot put a hot plate or a hot pot on those. It will damage the plastic laminate, but that's not the end of the world because you can put a stone or a piece of slate or a piece of Corel ware adjacent to your stove to place a pot on. Other surfaces that you can put a pot on directly would include a stone such as granite or quartz countertop or even a concrete countertop. I really like concrete countertops and want to make my own someday as an experiment with broken glass. Those are interesting, a little bit labor-intensive, but they're a little bit different, and sometimes it's nice to have something a little bit different.
Well, Teresa, thanks for the call. We'll quickly go to Jeff, who I hung up on a moment ago. Jeff, you're on.
Hi. I have a stone and brick foundation. The brick foundation is all the interior parts of the foundation, and it's all painted white, and I to understand that it's called the parging. And the parging looks fine about two-thirds of the way down, and then it all is flaking off. And even some of the mortar in between the bricks is coming out. There's never any water present, or you don't see any signs of moisture. But why is this flaking off, and what can I do about it?
It could be minerals migrating to the inside of the wall and popping the surface. You can wire brush it and recoat it. You say white in an older building, sometimes I think the term is called whitewash. They whitewash the whole interior of the basement, timbers and walls. So, you know, maybe that's what you have on your walls.
Is this term parging, not,
no,
something?
Parging is an accurate masonry term for coating, the inside, you know, a masonry surface. Yeah, and you,
okay.
there are masonry products out there. You can use a masonry paint. The one name brand that comes to mind is Suroseal. They work really well. Mix them with water, and you can apply. It's like a pancake paste that goes on the wall, and it bonds really well to a masonry surface, durable. I would look into that, and if I was going to coat a basement wall that had the problem such as yours, that's what I would use as a masonry paint.
Why is it happening just in the bottom third?
You can get higher pressures down there, higher hydrostatic pressures, higher vapor pressures. I'm thinking there's more hydrostatic drive down lower. That's where the water is. The lower the elevation, that's more likely where the wall is. Pardon me?
And even interior brick partition walls in the basement, you have the same issue.
Yeah, maybe more humidity down lower.
All right. Well, listen, we're out of time here, and thank you for that call, and thanks to everybody who called in. How do people find out more about your gig, Darren Tracy?
Website, westbranchengineering.com, and my email is darren@westbranchinc.com.
Well, thank you, sir. We appreciate you being here. Support comes from New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts, offering a full selection of hydroponics, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment, Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts, online at anyhydro.com. Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. State Street Fruit Store, Deli, Wines, and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7, statestreetfruit.com. At the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/Tang. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here. Thank you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Jesse King. And our producer is Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we'll discuss travel for the holiday season. Stand by now for news.